This is episode number 189 with New York Times bestselling author Matt Hussey. Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin. Everyone to the episode today. Very excited about our guest. Matt Hussey has become a good friend over the last couple months here. We've connected in Los Angeles. And the more and more I learn about this guy, the more I learn to love him and all of the stuff that he does. Now, Matt Hussey, this guy is a charmer, and a charmer in a good sense of the word, because he is a wealth of information. He is an incredible speaker, a New York Times bestselling author, columnist for Cosmo magazine, and a dating expert on the Today Show. He's on the Today Show like every week. He also runs programs all across the world, helping thousands of men and women reach their true performance potential. He's worked with celebrities like Christina Aguilera, companies like Hugo Boss, Procter & Gamble, and over 50,000 women. I think it's probably like 100,000 now, but over 50,000 women have attended his live events, and he's reached over 10 million people online. He, is a young guy, but has a wealth of information and a wealth of experience. So it's like I go and watch some of his videos, and he's speaking to women about relationships, but it's like I learn about relationships with myself, with business partners, with my team. I learn about my business and just psychology and just everything. It's not just about helping women find the man of their dreams, although that's what he teaches, but he also teaches so much more. And I found this interview to be fascinating, a lot of fun, intimate, and really connected. So I hope you get a lot out of this interview. And make sure to check out the show notes back at lewishowes.com/189, as you're going to get the full video interview that we did here in the studio in School of Greatness. Also, some extra tips that Matt talks about that you're going to make sure you can only see on the bonus page at lewishowes.com/189. So make sure to check that out after this. And let's go ahead and dive in right now with the one and only Matt Hussey.
I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12 pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off. We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone if you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Okay, quick math. The less your business depends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com netsuite.com/greatness. netsuite.com/greatness. Again, head to netsuite.com/greatness.
Welcome back to the School of Greatness, everyone. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. We've got a new friend on, Matthew Hussey. What's up, brother?
Hello.
Good to see you, man.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm excited about this.
I am too, actually. Yeah, you've interviewed some big people, so I feel very honored to be here.
Well, you're another one of the big people. So I first heard about you because we connected a few weeks ago and talked about this, but I first heard about you because you were on a show called Ready for Love, and I was being aggressively recruited to be one of the quote unquote bachelors on the show as well. And I remember being so torn about this because the producers and the casting directors were like, Eva Longoria wants you. This is going to be a huge show. It's going to be bigger than The Bachelor. And I was so torn because I was like, this could be great for my business, but I don't want to be that guy who was a bachelor type, because none of those guys have done anything in their career afterwards, except for maybe one or two have like kind of done well. And I remember watching the show when it came out, because it was just promoted everywhere. Buses, planes, you know, everywhere you could go, it was just promoted. And I was like, who is this guy? You were the only guy on the show who's coaching these women. And there was two other like relationship coaches, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself, man, this could be big. But then after the third episode, it went under and they stopped it.
Yeah.
And I was like, thank God I didn't have to make a decision to do like the next season.
But yeah,
man, that was a heartbreak for you because you did so much time and energy in building this, you know.
It was a very grueling year doing that show. And it was kind of an example of something that, you know, I feel like in life there are things that you invest time in that you know will pay off tomorrow.
Right.
Or tonight, or whatever, you know, whatever that project is. Sometimes it's writing an essay, and you know by writing it, you'll be able to hand it in tomorrow, or it's making a sales call, and you know that you'll get commissioned by next week. This was like, it was like buying a lottery ticket, but then investing a year into that lottery ticket and hoping that it was going to be a winner.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be it certainly wasn't wasted investment, because a lot of interesting opportunities have come off the back of that. You know, there a lot has happened for me as a result of the exposure that that show gave me. Interestingly, not necessarily to a mass audience, because a mass audience never watched it.
Right.
But it gave me exposure to certain key decision makers who watched me perform in that environment, and as a result saw that I was capable of handling a show like that.
Yeah.
So a lot has come to me, but
Today's
at the same
show
time,
has come from that.
I'm now
iHeartRadio.
Exactly. I'm a regular on the Today. I'm a resident expert on the Today Show. I have my own radio show now, and you know, there's lots of good things, but at the same time, still, you know, every now and again, you think, God, that could have been huge.
Yes,
but,
huge. Because it was on ABC, right?
It was on NBC, but it was prime time. I mean, it was a big show. They spent millions and tens of millions of dollars. I think the budget I heard somewhere was $50 million for the show, there or thereabouts. So it is crazy, but you know, that's kind of life. I have a friend of mine is a director here in LA, and he said, you really had the full Hollywood experience from start to finish. You auditioned,
failed, right?
You got a show, you got chewed up, everything happened for you. So you know, that's kind of, in a way, that's kind of fun.
Except for the huge success of it.
Exactly. But you know what? That's the part you can do. Well, if you're in a business like ours where you get to invest in yourself and you don't have to wait for people to give you opportunities, then you don't really need the show for that. The show just becomes that catalyst.
And this is where I remember I do research on pretty much everyone, because I'm always interested in seeing what people are doing, how they're doing it, and then I reverse engineer what they're doing and see if I can apply it to my business. It doesn't matter if you're in the dating space or the sports or the fitness space.
Right.
How can I apply something to my business and to my vision? And I remember researching you and the other two women. I don't even remember who these other women are, but I remember Googling your name and seeing your website and saying, ah, this guy is smart, because you had built the back end, getting ready for the amount of traffic that I was going to come to you. Unfortunately, it didn't probably come as much as you wanted, but you built an engine and a system.
Yeah.
And this content or the foundation that the other two didn't have.
Yes. And we'd been building that for several years. So there's certain things that you can't just do overnight.
No.
Right.
It took time.
And luckily, because we'd already invested time in that, we were in a different position to benefit than the others were. Now, you know, the interesting thing is I remember once wanting to go on holiday, and one of my mentors, I said to one of my mentors, I can't go. I don't have enough time, you know? And he said, then you're a slave because you it's 7 days. And he said, at the end of the day, those 7 days that you have to build the systems in order to get will be worth it just to get you to build the systems.
Yes.
And, you know, I kind of think of the show a bit like that. The show forced me to be ready for something that never actually happened.
Right.
But by getting ready, my business is now stronger than it has ever been. So, you know, even that itself is kind of a blessing. Yeah.
And I read online, correct me if I'm wrong, that you've over 50,000 women have attended your live events. Is that?
Yeah. You know, that number's now out of date. It's now closer to 100,000.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So you do live events all over the world or how is it?
We started in London and those grew and grew, and we started doing them in a couple of different places in Europe, but mostly the UK.
Yeah.
And then it was my dream to do a seminar in America. Truthfully, it was my dream to come to America. I think 13 years old, I really wanted to live here.
Wow. Have you ever visited?
I had visited one. This is the funny, I'm embarrassed about this now. But when I was that age, 12, 13, my parents brought me to America for the first time and took me to Florida. And I remember
Disney World.
Yeah, exactly. The whole thing. And I remember it was the first time I'd ever been somewhere where someone said, you know, at the end of a phone call, like, have a great day. Or someone actually spoke to you. And I just remember, and of course, at the time, you know, I didn't put two and two together that I'm in Disney World. Everyone's trying to get a tip. Everyone's being paid to be super nice and tell you to have a magical day,
right.
Whatever.
That's kind of like that in a lot of places.
It is. And it did something to me because it was so different from what I'd grown up with in London.
And England is not like that.
No,
it's the opposite.
The complete opposite. Yes. And I thought, this is more what I want. I knew enough to know that there was a slightly contrived element to it where I was. But at the same time, I thought, I prefer this. You know, people sometimes say that about LA, like it's so fake, the way everyone's so nice to each other and blah, blah. Well, I don't mind that. Like, if their little bit of fakeness means that they're just a bit more polite when I first say hello to them or something, I'm sort of okay with that.
Yeah.
And so I kind of had this childish view of moving to America and everything being, you know, Disneyland. And then, interestingly, the older I got, that never really changed. Mm. Even when I traveled more of America and saw a real side of America and, you know, what America is in different states, because there are so many different Americas,
right?
Yeah,
of course.
But I still somehow felt more at home here than I did back there. And I still love England and I love where I'm from, but it's something about living here suits me better.
I used to date a girl who was
to answer your question, I started to bring seminars here just because I wanted to be here, not because I thought it was a terrifically good idea. I didn't necessarily think I'm now going to make it in America.
Sure.
I just thought, let me just, if I can run a seminar for five people in New York or something, at least I can say I'm going to America for work. And different.
When
you get to say I'm going for work, you somehow you feel important and special. And I lost money. I think the weekend I did it, I lost money. I spent more on my plane ticket, I think, than I made in seminar seminar tickets. But it meant something special to me to do it.
So now you've done 100,000 women who have come to your live events, and they're all smaller events. Are they bigger events? So how do those work?
They're different. So we have these 1 day dating events that I do for my organization, Get the Guy. So we coach women in their love lives, how to find, attract, and keep the guy they want. And the 1 day event that we do is kind of a show. Like it's a big event. We have anywhere from the smallest one we do is probably 300, but that's where we go to a small state that, you know, we're a small city, I should say, where we're bringing people that are just getting to know us. But, you know, when we do New York or LA or London, we're talking 1,500 people in a room.
It's amazing. It's a full day.
That's a full day. That's a long day. And then, but people are on their feet. They're moving around. They get used to the energy.
Is it all women?
All women.
Wow.
And then we do 5-day retreats where it's a bit smaller. It's more intimate. It's about 250 people.
Yeah.
And there we do a more immersive program.
Of course. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because there's not too many people in the relationship online dating advice space that I want to hang out with, because there's so many guys out there who just leave a bad taste in your mouth.
But don't you feel like that about self-help in general?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I sort of maybe, do. I've learned to hate it.
Maybe people say that about me too, right? They're like, oh, who is this guy preaching something? But I just feel like I've got a bad taste in my mouth, especially being in LA, because I've met a bunch of guys who have sleazy courses and they do the online marketing thing, in my opinion, in a way that isn't of the highest integrity. Now, I'm not saying I'm always, you know, I'm the most perfect person in the world with everything I do, because I know I make mistakes. But when you're intentionally doing something that's like, I don't know, it's just got a bad taste in my mouth in the dating space for some reason, a lot of the marketers. And I remember seeing your stuff the first time and thinking, oh, this guy's doing it right, but I don't know if I trust him yet. And someone introduced us via email, and I was kind of like, yeah, I don't know if I want to meet this guy, because honestly, the dating space, whatever. But then he was like, you know, he's actually a really good guy. You're going to love his stuff. And then when I met you, I was like, oh, I get it. Right. Now I know why 100,000 women come to your stuff. Now I know why you're on the Today Show all the time. Now I know why you're getting the results. And then I was like, let me watch some of these videos. And I'm going to link up a bunch of your videos here in the show notes for people. But I started watching your videos and I was like, wow, okay, it makes a lot of sense, because you're doing it with integrity and you actually have a lot of sound advice and wisdom for women. And I see you're helping a lot of millions of people you're helping. And the cool thing about you is, you know, I was actually listening to a video last night for like an hour of you, like it was like the 3 dating advice tips or something of you speaking in a seminar, answering questions, right? And I remember just hearing your answers. All these women would say, well, what if I'm, you know, with a guy and the flame's out? Or what if I'm excited and he was excited and then he starts not responding? And you were answering questions. And I was like, they're all so logical and sound. It's not like this sleazy, weird things. It's like, well, think about it. If you were in this position, how would you respond? And this and this and this. And it was like, man, you're giving great advice. And now I know why so many people are attracted to the information that you're putting out there.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I think that too much advice either strays into the either the aphoristic side of things. It's very cliche. I mean, this is what I think one of the big problems I have with the self-help industry in general is it's become so platitudinous. It's just it to the extent that it becomes mind-numbing, and to some extent the crowd that it begins to attract I don't like or have anything in common with. When someone comes up to me at the end of a seminar and says, you know, I love your stuff, you know, I'm a big Law of Attraction fan, I know immediately we have nothing in common. I think, wow, I don't even know how you like my stuff. Because I can't stand these concepts and this pseudoscience that is often put out there. For me, I'm all about the logical. I'm all about the practical, and I like things that can be tested. And I think that's why people like Tim Ferriss perhaps have done so well, because they in a market that is full of just vague, silly advice. I hear people in their say to women in their love lives, just open your heart. And you think, what do you mean by that? Like, what does she do today that's different based on that piece of advice? Just like, be yourself. Be yourself is extraordinarily lazy advice.
Right.
It's the advice people give when they don't know an actual solution. Because what do you just be yourself? What does that even mean? You know, and by the way, be yourself is often just a euphemism for don't grow.
Right? Because
how many people are the same person today they were 5 years ago?
No one.
Yeah. And who's going to be the same today, tomorrow as they are today? People change and they evolve. So be yourself is a very strange and lazy piece of advice to give someone, but that's what we get all the time. So advice either goes into the kind of vague, or it ends up going into sometimes the sleazier or more sarcastic elements. I sometimes think at the other end of the spectrum, sometimes you have the comedian, you know, the guy who is just, everything's a joke, everything's sarcastic, this very cynical, oh, you can't change anything, blah, 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 learn to deal with it. Blah, blah. Yeah. And that gets too much the other way. Then someone essentially just becomes a cynic. And for me, what I try and base my advice on is this nice balance of realism, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't even say optimism, just the being empowered to actually do something about real life, however that stands.
So what I'm curious about is how, why is it you have the credibility to give so many women advice? You're only 27, right?
Mm.
And why should they listen to you when, you know, you're a man?
Yeah.
Should they even trust you? You know, you're not married, right?
No.
And you're currently single, I believe, right?
Single.
So why should they believe what you're saying has, you know, validity?
Firstly, that you're right in the sense that being a man gives me no extra credibility whatsoever.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all. Or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare, but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life. So don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent, or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I always cringe when a journalist says to me, well, this is so great because you're a guy, so you can give them insight into guys. I think, what a stupid argument that is. It's like saying you're a woman, so you know all women.
Right.
Well, how many women are exactly the same?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, how many women do you get in a room and they agree on everything? The same is true of men. I'm not here to speak on behalf of all men.
Sure.
I might be here to relay a message that I constantly get from men, or something that I observe with an enormous number of men. I mean, I say to women, I only started working with women, A, because they asked me to. I didn't. When I was coaching guy, I coached nearly 10,000 guys, and women were saying, when are you going to do the same thing for us?
Wow.
And I said, I don't know, because I don't really know you. I know men, because I've not because I'm a guy, but because I've just coached 10,000 of them over the last 3 years. I said, so I have something to say about men. I said, but I don't know you. And they said, don't worry, we don't want to know more about us. We want to know about men.
Yeah.
So I said, well, that I can do. And I sat down and I started talking about some things that felt obvious to me based on what I'd learned from men, but weren't obvious to them. You know, a very simple thing would be that there were so many women out there that were saying, well, I want a guy who has the balls to make a move on me, right? And if he's interested, he's already coming over to me. And there were massive dating books out there for women that would say this, like, if he's not coming over to you, don't bother going up to him, because if he wanted to be there, he would be. This defied everything that I'd ever seen, not just from every man I'd ever coached, but from growing up around men and what, and even for myself, this is an area where my personal experience does relate to that lesson. I was terrified.
I was terrified.
The idea of walking up to a woman and saying, I like you, or I think you're cute. Yeah. I got brought up by my mum to be a gentleman, right? I was brought up to, you know, buy flowers, buy the meal. Don't ever let her pay. Don't ever let her carry her bag, open her door. So at school, as a teenager, I got mauled by women for being that way. You know, I got walked all over.
Yeah.
They liked me. They thought I was a nice guy, but I was the one holding their bag while they got with that guy.
Right.
So it didn't translate. And I knew as a guy, as a teenager, something wasn't clicking. And something about what I'd been taught about attraction by my mum, who taught me treat every woman like a princess.
Yeah.
Something about that advice wasn't translating and wasn't working. Now, when I started hearing from these books written for women, if he likes you, he's already talking to you. I looked at that and I thought, God, you know what? I'm not a loser. I'm not someone who's got everything going wrong in their life and is like, you know, oh, that's why he hasn't got the confidence. No, I was like a guy who had some great things going for him, and yet still I would look over there and go, no way.
Yeah.
I'm not doing anything.
Man.
Terrifying. So, you know, I started to say to women, listen, firstly, guys, even the guys you want are nervous about coming over to you. So you might have to do a little more to make this a possibility.
Because make them feel good about themselves, comfortable to come on.
Correct. And women will say, well, no, that's not true, Matt, because, you know, there are these guys who always hit on me when I go out. Yeah, but it's the same 5% every time.
Yes.
Right? There's 5 to 10% of guys who will hit on everybody who walks in the room.
Yeah.
Right? But that's not representative.
They're not getting the girls.
Right. Very often they're not.
They're not getting the girls.
There's a percentage of those who are like players who are good at it.
Yeah.
Who know how to do it.
Just spit the game.
Actually, most guys aren't in that mode. Most guys aren't good at doing that and actually don't wish to do that because they don't want to be sleazy and they don't want to seem like that guy. So I started saying, women, you might have to do a little bit more. And don't assume, because I, in a seminar, any woman who comes to my seminar will see this. I'll say, put your hand up if at some point or another you've said or thought, well, if he doesn't have the balls to come and approach me, I don't think he's my type of guy anyway. Mm. And like, 90% of the hands go up. So I say, here's the thing. As a guy, when you live in a city, you probably see 30 women a day that you're attracted to.
Yes.
Right?
You can't go up to every one of them.
You can't go up to every one of them, nor would you wish to, nor is it convenient to. And sometimes you just see a woman standing with her friend and you're like, oh, do I really want to go and approach her in front of her friend and have the possibility that she's got a boyfriend and I'm going to have to walk away.
When you get rejected, you don't want to go do it again.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
So I would say to them, if out of those 30 women that a guy sees in a day, he's going to approach the one that makes it slightly easier for him to approach her than the other 29.
One that says, it's okay for you to talk to me.
Correct. However she chooses to do that.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean you making some big grand move.
No.
It just means, I call it dropping the handkerchief. When you, women who say I'm old fashioned, I don't make the first move. I always say, then you're not old fashioned. Because 100 years ago, a woman would walk past a guy, drop her handkerchief and keep walking.
Mm.
The guy would see it. He'd say, this is an extraordinary opportunity to be a man.
Yes.
He'd pick up the handkerchief.
Rescue the girl.
Walk it over to her and say, madam, you dropped this. And she'd say, did I? And they'd now have a conversation. Now, he thought it was his idea.
Yes. And she was clumsy.
She chose him.
Wow.
So I say to women, listen, this isn't about reversing roles here and you suddenly doing the guy's job. It's about you doing what women have always done and dropping the handkerchief. You just need to know how to do it in 2015.
Wow.
So that's...
What are some ways to do it? What are two or three ways that a woman could do this to create an opportunity for a conversation to happen?
Right. So one of them is really, really simple. There was actually a book written by a guy called, I think, Richard Wiseman. It was called 59 Seconds. But one of the studies in the book that wasn't done by him, it was done by, I think, Jecker and Landy, was about the psychology of favors. And what they found years ago when they did this study, they were looking for the obvious, right? If I do you a favor, you'll like me more.
Yes.
What they actually found was, if I do you a favor, I'll like you more. Because we like people that we're able to help in some small way. The only caveat was that the favor couldn't be something that was difficult to perform. If you ask me something that's difficult, I could get annoyed, right? Yeah. And frustrated. Yeah. If you ask me something that's easy for me to do and I get to help you in some way, I actually end up liking you more. So the psychology, when done in the direction of woman to, man to woman, is much more powerful, because men have these two instincts, provide and protect. So now when a woman comes up and asks for a favor, he immediately gets to cater to those two male instincts that make him feel important. So the advice goes like this. If you walk up to a guy and you say, use this one first line, and it will work time and time again. You say, I could really use your help with something. That one line is going to have 9 out of 10 guys immediately receptive to whatever you say.
They want to provide and protect.
Yeah, anything. Right, Tell me how I can feel important right now. So I could really use your help with something. Now,
it could be answering a question. It could be anything, right?
Directions. But let's say you're in a bar and you say, could you hold my jacket for 2 seconds while I give these drinks to my friends? I'm running out of hands here.
Smart.
You then take your drinks, you give them to your friends, you come back, you take your jacket and you say, thank you so much, you're a gentleman. How's your evening going anyway? Now, the beauty of this is, rather than having to go up to him randomly and saying, how's your evening going, which makes it feel like you've really chosen him. In this example, he's doing you the favor. You're just politely asking how his evening is going after he's already done the favor for you. So that's an easy way for women to drop the handkerchief. In any environment, and they never have to risk rejection with that, because there's nothing for him to reject. It's just a simple favor.
Wow. Okay. So that's number one.
That's number one. Let's think of a good one here. This kind of goes alongside it. I mean, you could ask a guy's opinion, for example. You could say, in fact, here's a good one. When you're with your friends and you see a group of guys, simply walk up to them and say, we're trying to guess what people's jobs are by what they're wearing.
Oh, that's cool.
And then start guessing. Everyone loves this game because you have fun guess. You could, and again, you can start in a funny way and say, you're a spy. but whatever it is, play with it a little.
Sure.
But then the nice thing is they immediately know how to carry on that conversation because they're going to do it back.
Now, for guys who are experiencing this and they see a woman who creates an opportunity to talk to them, and now it's their responsibility to kind of continue the conversation, right? And to show that, okay, now I am interested.
So this is a really important part. This is really important because there is a mistake people make here. And I realized this early on because I was giving women this way to go and be proactive with guys in a way that they hadn't been before. But they were making the mistake of staying in there too long.
Oh.
Right?
So don't stick around.
No. Think of it this way. In order to give someone the opportunity to hit on you in the first place, you need to close the gap. So when a woman goes in and says, I mean, there's another one I'll give you. If this one's, always pay attention to what's going on around you. And if nothing else, say the obvious. So you could be in a bar, lining up for a drink, and you say to the guy next to you, oh my God, it's so busy in here. Right? That's it. By the way, you're not saying it's so busy in here. You're saying it's okay for you to talk to me.
Right?
That's really what you're saying. So in that moment, again, if you wanted to make it more flirtatious, you'd say, oh my God, it's so busy in here. It's you with your big shoulders. Move.
Right.
And then you'd push him. And then you immediately are going to have some great tension. He's going to feel manly. but the key thing is, don't then stay in there. I was in LA recently, and I was with two buddies, and three women came over and started talking to us. Now, I can't fault that, because that's what I help people to do that. I think it's important. I think they did the right thing. But what they could have changed is, when they came over to speak to us, they stood facing us with their feet pointed towards us in a circle, And then there was no sign of them leaving ever.
They were just right? committed to being there.
You know when
there.
That someone's body language says, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And it immediately makes you nervous because you sort of think, oh, you're like, how am I going to get out of this situation?
You're not interested in them.
Right.
You don't want to be in
And a woman knows this feeling much better than a man because when a woman is approached by a guy, she can't even concentrate on whether she's attracted to him if he's too much in her space to begin with.
Yeah.
He needs to give her space to observe him and decide she's attracted to him before he keeps just going and going and going. So these women would have been better off to maybe a minute in, just turn and talk to each other again. They don't have to go to the other side of the room and make things difficult, but just turn and talk to each other. Or, God forbid, there's another person there that they turn to and ask something of.
Right.
What they've done is close the gap, but then recreated space. Mm. So the second step of recreating space is very, very important because when they recreate space, it gives us a chance to observe them, a chance to miss them, and a chance to think, oh, how do we get them back over here? So now when we go over there and say, by the way, I was thinking about what you said just now and keep talking. For them, it's like, ah, okay, that's like now they've made a move. Now, now they've chosen to be in the situation instead of us just choosing to be there and never knowing if they were really attracted.
And that's what needs to happen for women is they need to feel chosen as well.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. So it's kind of like you're choosing him to begin with so that you're not just randomly choosing from the pool of guys that are brave enough or obnoxious enough to run up to you. But at the same time, you're giving it space so that he can choose you and you can be confident in that process.
And then from there, there's a whole nother workshop you do on teaching how to get the guy or how to get the girl after that.
You can imagine,
it never
right?
ends. What is the, what's the biggest mistake people find today when trying to find their love or find someone that they, you know, their soulmate?
Oh my God.
What's the biggest mistake? Is it being yourself?
I think there's something of a sense of entitlement that most of us have, or that most people have when they're going out to date, where they somehow feel like they're just owed the love of their life, that it shouldn't be difficult, that that they don't have to do anything, that it's enough, that they are just them. You know, it's the, you know, that there's, I don't know if you've ever seen Bridget Jones, but there's a line in Bridget Jones where, forget his name, Colin Firth, I think it is. He's looking at Bridget and I think he says, I love exactly how you are. I love you. Like no changes, nothing. I love you exactly how you are. And it, sometimes we feel like we're owed that. And it kind of becomes an excuse again, not
lazy
to grow, not to, you know, it doesn't really matter what you think you're owed in love.
Yeah.
No one cares.
I think it's the same thing with work and, you
it's
know, so many people are entitled and they think they should just get a job. You know?
And so the biggest criticism I get all the time, which I'm happy with as a criticism of my advice is, well, why do you need to do all of this stuff? Why can't you just, you know, go through life and you know, when the time is right, you'll know. Why do you have to do all of these techniques? I'm happy with that criticism. If that's what you think, you're not my audience, because my audience are the same people that go to a business seminar to make more money. They're the same people that say, you know what, if I want to start a business, I might actually need to know what the hell I'm doing. It's not enough to have confidence in life. You have to have competence. You have to actually know what you're doing. And that's what a lot of people don't know in their love lives. If you, for example, there's something I came to understand. I remember once having a breakup. It was the most painful breakup I've ever had. I was really, really in a bad way over it. And a while later, I spoke to this woman on the phone, and I had said to her in a brave moment on the phone, I said, why did you want to break up? Because, by the way,
you talked to the woman you were dating.
Yeah, the one that had
later on the phone.
Later, like a year or two later. It was less raw. I was feeling a little more.
And how long was the relationship for?
A couple of years.
Okay, wow. Right.
And I was pretty cut up about it. Now, the funny thing was, to make a long story short, she had actually done something I didn't like. and that I thought was inappropriate and disrespectful. And I remember going to her the next day and saying, I think we need to break up.
During the relationship, she did this, yeah.
Yeah. And she then said to me, okay. That was when I knew she was breaking up with me. It wasn't, you know, when you think you're breaking up with them.
No, she was already doing it.
She was breaking up with me. And it was, what was so painful about it is that she didn't mind. I thought she might get upset. I thought, no, she didn't mind. And that was the most painful part about it. And
she didn't even fake it. You know, most women would fake that they mind. I can't believe this, but they're really.
I know. No, she looked like she was okay. This is a good decision. So I remember a while later we were on the phone and we're friends today. We're very good friends, in fact. And I had said to her on the phone, "Why did we break up?" I said, "What was it for you that I wasn't doing?" And I braced myself for the answer. She said, "Do you really want to know?"
Honest feedback.
And I said, I literally thought to myself, wait, do I really want to know? And I said, I gritted my teeth and I went, yeah, I want to know. She said, you were boring. And it was so much worse than I thought it would be. Do you know what I mean? Wow. Like not just like, oh, well, you know, it was just, I was young and I was, you know, wanted to be free. No, you were boring. It was really cutting. And I remember resisting the urge to bite back. And I said,
"That wasn't boring."
Right,
I was,
exactly. I said, "No, you're shut up, idiot. Just, you asked the question. So now listen." So I said, "Why was I boring?" She said, "When I first met you, you were the most ambitious person I'd ever met." And she said, "I never met someone with such an ability to decide they want something and then get it." Mm. And she said, "It was so sexy." She said, "But as we went into our relationship, the more time went on, the more that was all you were. You were super ambitious. You knew how to get what you want, but you were so one-dimensional. Mm. You know, it was all you did. Even in our free time, you were on the phone, you were on your laptop, you would talk about your business. You were always talking shop. There was never anything else you had to talk about. We didn't do anything spontaneous. We never went and had adventures. It was just all one track." And she said, it got boring.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, she was right. There was nothing I could argue with. And I realized something in that moment. The thing that makes that one quality can make you really attractive, right? But it won't keep someone. It
can make you get the person.
Right. It can make you sexy. It can make you intriguing.
Mysterious.
Right. But it can even, for a time, make someone worship or idolize you. Mm-hmm. One quality. But one quality will not hold someone. Because the reality was, there was a flip side to ambition, which would have made it eminently more attractive. And there are a few. Right. If you pair ambition, say, with an ability to enjoy life, now that person is
really
super sexy. you combine ambition with a sense of spontaneity, for example.
Adventure.
Very, very sexy.
Yes.
Ambition on its own is, when you look at it from afar, very, very attractive. You go, women will say, "I want an ambitious man. I like that." But when they get up close, if it's only one side to a coin, it quickly becomes unattractive. Someone I'm a big fan of, or unfortunately has passed, but Christopher Hitchens, he once said about love that the challenge is in not allowing your strengths to negate themselves.
Wow.
And that's a very powerful statement, because my ambition was my greatest strength that also had the ability to be the thing that crippled me. Because what happens is, when you get good at something and you get validation from it,
you want to keep doing it and get better at it.
Yeah. And it becomes, if you're not careful, a muscle that you train to the point of mutation.
Mm-hmm.
And then every other part of you is not working, it has atrophied.
Yeah.
So now you have a complete imbalance. It's like, I remember working out at the gym once, and my trainer, I was doing pull-ups and was trying to work out my back. My back was fine. I could keep going. And then all of a sudden my forearms gave up while I was trying to pull myself up. And I said, "This is so annoying. We're trying to work my back, but my back's fine, but my forearms have given up."
Right.
He said, "You're only as strong as your weakest link."
Mm.
if your forearms aren't there, you're not going to be able to train your back as well as you could.
Yeah.
So here's the point about this, which I find very interesting about dating. To your point of what's the biggest mistake people make, apart from, of course, the entitlement, it's over-reliance on a key strength that they have come to rely on as their source of validation, mm-hmm. success, confidence.
Right.
Over-reliance on that. I had come to over-rely on essentially being ahead of the curve for my age.
Yeah.
That was like the thing that I was always based my confidence on, was I am way ahead of the curve for people my age.
My business is going great.
Correct. The people I grew up with in my age group are not where I am.
Just are still living at home. And
but guess what? That alone is boring.
Yeah.
It's boring and it doesn't make an interesting, rounded, sexy person. But when you combine it with something else, it becomes what I call unique pairing. It's a bit like if I wanted to really get a woman attracted tonight, not me, but like send a guy out to get a woman attracted, I could literally, if he went in and he was a little cocky and teasing, but in the right way, not an arrogant, obnoxious, sure. but just he knew how to play with her. And then a couple of hours in later, you know, maybe it's getting late. He comes out of the restroom and after being teasing and playful and silly, he says, you know what? It's getting late. I called you a car. I don't want you walking outside. And he says, I have to go as well. I have to get up early. He takes her outside. He gives her a little kiss. He says, all jokes aside, I've had the best night with you tonight. I'll call you later this week. Mm-hmm. Puts her in the car. Car drives away. That woman will be going, oh, crap. I like this guy. Yeah. Now, the reason wasn't because he was a gentleman. And it wasn't because he was cocky and teasing. It was because he was both.
Both of them, yeah.
It's the and.
If he does just one thing, it's not interesting enough.
Because you can replace the cocky guy like that.
Yes.
Women know that.
Yes.
They can go out tonight and meet a cocky guy in Hollywood yes. any night of the week. They can go out the next – they don't even have to go out the next night. They can turn to their left and meet another one straight
right,
away.
Right.
By the way, even though people complain about chivalry is dead, you can go out and meet a gentleman. You lots can go out gentlemen. And meet lots of nice guys.
But that's all they are.
Right. Incredibly boring. Women will never
too nice.
They don't hold a woman. Yes. Right. So, but now you find like what seems to be a good man, but with an edge.
That's
a unique pairing.
Yes.
And that's someone that becomes not an attraction, but an addiction.
Ooh.
And there's a big, big difference. So I believe these pairings already exist within us, but we've overtrained certain muscles. We've overtrained certain qualities that we've gotten used to as habit. For some people, it's being funny.
Sure.
For other people, it's being intellectual, and they're the person that knows everything about everything. They've read every book. They can always quote so-and-so. For others, it's being seductive. That's the thing they got really good at. So they're really good at, you know, getting someone into bed or getting someone sexually attracted, but they're never the person you want to eat pizza with the next day.
Right, right.
You know, so it's like it's finding those combinations that make you go, oh my God, the person I was with last night, they were this and they were this. It's the and. The and is where
I wonder
it's
what else they could do.
Exactly. And by the way, that's what makes it so hard. I say this to everybody. If you want to know why you found it so hard to get over a certain ex, look for the unique pairing.
Ooh, because they had multiple things.
There was some unique pairing that made you feel
addicted.
Like they were difficult to replace.
Oh.
And that's what scares us. The more unique pairings you have, the more you become a rare bird in the dating marketplace.
Right.
Right. And when you become rare, people get really terrified of losing you. And that's always the case. Whenever you think of someone you've lost and you think like your heart aches for having lost them.
For like months and months.
Yeah. It's not because you go, they were good in bed. It's because you go, they were good in bed and they made me laugh. Like I never
and
find
they were
that.
Nice to right. my parents.
And I took them home and she was a sweetheart to my, like there's those moments where you go, God, I can't find this person again. And that terrifies you.
Yeah.
So again, to be more positive about it, be the person that has the unique pairings that other people are terrified of losing.
Yeah. You know, I like this because I feel like well, I don't feel like, but the statistics show that the divorce rate is up higher than ever right now, right? Mm. Isn't it something like 50%? I don't know if you
hear,
know
I hear these. No, I hear 50% bandied around. How accurate it is, I don't know.
Who knows? But it seems like people are getting married multiple times, and they're easy to get out of relationships. They're, you know, and I'll speak for myself. You know, I have a lot of fears about long-term commitment. Mm. You know, most of my relationships are a year, maybe longer, but usually about a year. And then I'm like either bored or I get scared because I have my own walls and I still get to grow and learn.
For sure.
I'm curious, why do you think so many people bail in relationships? And why do you think so many people are getting divorced more than ever now?
Oh, man, that's a big question. I think there are a number of things. I can have a stab at this. I think, firstly, there is less of a stigma now than there has ever been about divorce.
It's okay now, right?
Right. Not, you know, and it certainly there are parts of the world where it's not, and there are certain religions and cultures where it's not, but certainly less than ever.
Sure. Let's speak in America, at least.
Right. Yeah, yeah. There's less of a stigma about divorce. We don't feel like complete failures in the same way that we might once have, or we wouldn't have, there would have been a time where we would have been outcast from society for it. So there's that. I think there's also a greater sense of entitlement these days where people feel like they're owed and, you know, marriage is you've met the right person. So it's supposed to all feel great. And when it doesn't feel great and when it's not all working, there must be something wrong with this person. Not with me, not with the amount of effort I'm investing into this relationship. There must be something wrong with this person. Ah, it turns out they're not the one after all. Mm. I thought they were, but they're not. The search continues. So, so it, the entitlement has people believing that it shouldn't be effort. And that's a very dangerous way to think of relationships. Yeah. It's very, if you really want to see who someone is in their relationship, talk to them about sex and passion and desire in their long-term relationship. And you'll get some very heated answers because some people will say it's absolutely paramount. We, you know, you have to maintain that passion. You have to find new ways to excite each other. Me and my partner, we're always searching. Mm. We're always exploring each other. We're always trying to figure out like, what's going to turn you on tomorrow? What's the, like, how do I do something that you didn't predict? Or how do I get you to know me a little less so that you get desire again? Mm-hmm. You know, whatever it is. Other people, and I've had hosts on TV get very, very uptight and upset over this issue. And it's usually they're overplaying their hand when they do. They'll say, well, Matt, it's different. When you're in a marriage, when you have kids, when you're in those situations, it's different, right? You can't just think of it like that. You don't, Matt, think other things become more important. And I always know who they are in their relationship when those things happen, because people, I think, don't go into relationships with a healthy view of what is required over the long term.
And what is required?
Well, there's a woman who is a great authority on this called Esther Perel, and she talks about the difference between love and desire. And I'm a big fan of her work, and I think she articulates it very, very well, that in relationships, you have to have both love and desire. Love isn't enough. Love is the thing that makes me want to get close to you. When I feel things for you, I want to know your mind. I want to know everything there is to know about you. I want to know what you're thinking. I want to know what you're doing tonight. I want to know who your friends are. I want to become friends with them. I want to get close to your mom. I want it's all these things. That's love. The desire to almost become merged. Mm-hmm. But desire exists in the space between two people. Mm-hmm. So you feel desire when there's a void and when there's some mystery and when you're still getting to know someone. So desire, ironically, is the thing that ends up creating love, because desire is like, I want to get close to you because I don't have you. And then when I get close, we feel feelings of love, but not desire now.
Right.
So
how do you keep that after years?
And that's a great question. And it's a big one. I think there are many answers, and I think they change depending on the couple.
So what you're saying first before you answer is you've got to have both love and desire throughout the relationship in order for it to be a successful one, let's say.
Yeah, in order to satisfy your needs along the way, because I think many people get divorced because not because there's a lack of love. I mean, sometimes that's true. You know, it's true that two people don't give each other enough love. They don't act as a team. Mm-hmm. And there are problems with that.
Right.
But a lot of people, it's too much because of lack of love. A lot of people, it's because of lack of desire.
Interesting.
That create, you know, these weird moments in relationships where sometimes people cheat, or they, maybe it's not going as far as cheating, but they realize that they're having all of these thoughts that they're not proud of. Maybe they just have to leave because they think there's something wrong with them because they're bored. You know, I got a question on the Today Show recently. I mean, me and Kathy Lee, you know, got heated over this issue because, you know, there was a guy on there whose question was, my kids have just gone off to university. How do, you know, we're now, basically what he was saying is the kids have all left. So now it's just me and my wife.
Now what?
So how do me and my wife now keep it fresh? Mm. And there's a great quote by Proust. When he says, I think it's the journey of discovery lies not in seeking new landscapes, but in seeing with new eyes.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting when applied to a relationship.
Because you're not seeing a new landscape. You're seeing the same landscape over and over every moment.
So you better get good at seeing with new eyes, right? Now, the landscape, of course, can change because that person, their job is to make themselves less predictable. And you don't do that by like playing hard to get with your partner necessarily. No, no. But what you do is you grow, you develop new skills, you learn new things, and you develop yourself in ways that keep your partner guessing about you because they're like, oh my God, I have to keep up.
Yes.
I have to keep up with this because they keep evolving.
Yes.
And that in itself, you can start to desire your partner more because you feel like you know them a little less. Not because they're now hiding things from you, but because they're developing. And when someone develops and grows, you're like, oh my, I don't know this side of you. I need to learn it. And it sparks attraction again. So there's that whole thing. But I said to this guy, I know everyone's going to tell you, now your kids have gone off to university. Now you have all this time to spend together. I said, but the problem is you're going to have nothing to talk about.
Because you've said it all.
You've said it all and you've been together this whole time. So
there's nothing new to talk about.
Right. I said, I'm going to give you a kind of strange piece of advice. I think you should use this time to spend some time apart.
Wow.
She go on holiday and you go on holiday and then come back and tell each other about it. You know, have that some space so that when you come back together, there's a little mystery to it. You know, that it will be scary. And this is why people get very emotional about this and they get upset because they're like, what do you mean get to know my husband less? What do you mean like spend time apart? We are supposed to be like this the whole time. But what they don't realize is, A, you never know your partner as well as you think you do. So the idea that you're like this and you know everything about them is a complete illusion. And secondly, you doing that is death to the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really care and if you really are a team, you'll be able to trust each other, but you'll be able to give each other space to create that desire again.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're suffocating each other.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's another thing that people don't anticipate when they're in the feelings of love and desire all mixed together early on, and they decide to get married. They don't anticipate that over the long term, and I think many of us are out there making promises that we cannot keep.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you the whole different conversation is to what extent monogamy works and to what extent
it's a whole nother topic.
That's a whole other thing, you know, and I think if we're not going to cover it, we should, it's fair to say that for some people it works and for others it doesn't. But that is a whole other can of worms.
I mean, I've got a few questions left for you. I have lots of questions, and maybe I can convince you to come back on. We can do some more of these sometimes.
This has been great so far.
So we could talk more about this, because I think people are going to like this topic. And I haven't really dove into intimate relationships in this way for this extended amount of time. So I'd love to have you come back on if we can make it happen.
Love to.
Because I want to cover monogamy next time.
Cue the hype in the comments.
I also want to cover marriage in general, because I'm still in the discovery stage of my life of what is marriage? What was marriage originally intended for the first time it was created, however many years ago?
Yeah.
Thousands of years ago.
On an anthropological level, it's very interesting.
And why are we still practicing the same things we did from its original intent? And if that's the case, should we keep doing marriage?
Yeah.
And should we keep doing it when 50% of them fail? You know, I have all these questions that I'm still in discovery for myself.
As am I. Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think anything's right or wrong. I just think it's coming up with your own solution that works for you and your partner.
100%. And I think it works for many, many people.
Yes.
I will say I'm like you. I haven't quite figured out yet whether it will work for me or not. I don't know. I know that I have a lot of issues personally with it, and I don't give those to other people because I think some people are very different to me, and different from each other. But I know there are things that I struggle with, and, I haven't figured it out. That's why I always cringe when I go on a TV show and they call me a relationship expert. Which they love, you know, these shows love to label you as something nice and simple. I always say I'm really what I am is a guy who likes to talk about people.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not got quite the same ring
to it. It's not packaged as
well. But the idea of a dating expert or a relationship expert to me is an unbelievably narcissistic idea. And I cringe every time I hear it because it's who could say that they're an expert in all things relationships?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's all good though. Well, I was going to ask you a few more questions, but I think I want to wrap it up on this one and bring you back another time.
Okay.
So I want to ask you a couple different questions, not related to that. One is, what are you most grateful for in your life recently? I like to finish with gratitude.
Wow. God, I think one thing I'm very grateful for is I just recently applied for my green card. It kind of brings a dream full circle.
Mm-hmm.
Fingers crossed, it should be coming through in the next couple of months. Hopefully I don't get rejected, but it's come full circle, you know, something that I had dreamed about for a very long time. And really has been, nearly two decades of thinking about that idea.
Wow.
Has actually come to fruition, and it's amazing to me that it started with me thinking, why not come and do a seminar for five people and lose money just to say that I'm doing something in America. Yeah. And I'm there now. So that, you know, I say to everyone out there, always drive in the thin end of the wedge, whatever it is the smallest possible thing that relates to your bigger dream. Do the smallest possible thing, because you never know what domino effect that might have. I could never have guessed that by this age I would be living here and traveling the country doing what I love, and I am, and I feel immensely grateful for that.
That's cool, man. Very cool. I've been asking this question a lot lately for some of my guests, so I'm going to ask you this one as well because I'm interested to hear the response. But it's the many, many years from now, it's the end of your life, the last day. And everything you've ever said online, written, you're a New York Times bestselling author, you've got millions of views on all your videos, has been erased from time.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a piece of paper and a pen. All your friends and family are there supporting you in your final moments, telling you how much they love you. You got a pen and a piece of paper, and they say you get to write down three truths about life, the three things you know to be true about life. And this is the only thing that people will get to see from your message moving forward, because everything else has been erased.
Wow.
What would you write down as the three truths?
Let's see if I can think of three.
They don't have to be perfect, but what comes to your mind?
Be kind. I think one of my favorite shows is Derek. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's a Ricky Gervais show. But it's about a guy who works in an old people's home. And his favorite line is a line his mum told him, which was, kindness is magic. And I don't believe in magic. And I don't know what happens later on or whether anything bigger is there. But I do believe that there is a magic to kindness that is really, really special. So even when it feels like you shouldn't be kind, or that the whole world is horrible, be kind, because you just never know who is watching and who will decide that there is still some good in the world because you did something kind. So, and I'm always grateful for anyone who restores faith, anyone's little faith in humanity in those little tiny moments. So be kind. Number two, always operate on the assumption that you don't know nearly enough. Coming up, I remember my friend told me, I remember him meeting up with me once. This is, you know, when I was kind of starting out, but getting a bit big for my britches about what I was doing. And he said, you know, he said, what books have you read recently? Uh-huh. And I said, I haven't. I said, because to be honest, you know, I'm doing all these seminars and I said, I don't want to put all of these other ideas in my head. I want to, you know, I'm trying to develop these ideas and I don't want to have all of these different. And he looked at me and he was an older guy. He's about 40 years old. And he looked at me and he said, mate, he said, I can't tell you how disappointed I am with that answer.
Wow.
And I looked up to this guy. So wow. I was mortified, but I have in recent years understood exactly what he meant, that he's a learner and someone who always operates on the assumption that he doesn't know enough. Mm. So always operate under the assumption that you don't know enough and never trust anyone who claims to know everything, about anything. And then the third one. God, the third one. I think there are many, many different lives that you could lead. Mm. I think one of the most depressing things about life is you won't have time to lead them. You won't have time to read the books you want to read. Even if you stack them all up and think about them all now, you'll already have to start eliminating enormous numbers. You won't be able to travel to every country that you want to go to. I mean, we always think we will. We have all this long list of countries we think we're going to go to. If you want to depress yourself, list all of them and look at how many you already have to eliminate. You'll realize you're only going to do a select few more, even if you're young. The jobs you think you'd enjoy, the career paths you think you'd enjoy, the types of people you'd like to meet, there just isn't time. And that makes it that much more important that we enjoy the path that we take instead of obsessing over the 10,000 paths that we didn't take. Because that really is the most tremendous waste of life is when we obsess over the paths we didn't take instead of figuring out how to enjoy the one that we have taken. Even if we look to improve it or adapt it or change it, even then you'll adapt one way and there will have been 10,000 other ways you could have adapted.
Sure.
So it's not easy, but I think the challenge for us all is to figure out how to enjoy the path that we're actually on.
Yeah. Well, that's a good three truths, man.
I'm really happy because I got to number two. I thought, what is the last one going to be? But no, I feel quite solid in those.
That's good. I want to ask one more question, but before I do, I want to take a moment to acknowledge you, Matt, for your ambition, because you are so ambitious, but your ability to continue learning. And when you teach with humility. Mm. And for me, that really comes across and I appreciate that. And it reminds me to myself to always come from a humble place when I'm educating or facilitating anything, because that really connects and lands with people in a deeper way. And I know you've been inspiring and impacting hundreds of thousands, if not millions of women around the world, because you come from that place of love and humility when you educate. And so I want to acknowledge you for your ambition and your humility to continue learning what you don't know.
Thank you so much. Yeah. That means the world to me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Final question. Before I ask, where should people go to connect with you and learn more?
Well, I guess I should give a couple of options, one for the men and one for the women. For women out there, I have something really fun, actually, for the women out there. It's free of charge, but I get an enormous number of questions about texting. And I think actually somehow the way you text is a kind of microcosm for how you are in communication in general. So there's a guide that I put together, which is the 9 texts that get any man to chase you. And it's really cute and fun. And literally you can take these 9 texts, whether you're in a relationship, some of them are good for a relationship. Some of them are good for when you have a guy that's gone cold. Some of them are good for if you just met someone, but there's something in there for everybody. And it's literally, I mean, you can download it now and use, like, copy and paste them into your phone and use them right now and tweet me, let me know. Cause I always get tweets about this guide from people who have used it and say, that was that one text really made a difference. So if you want to go and download that, it's at 9texts.com. Cool. And it works either with the number 9 or the word 9. So 9texts.com.
And I'll be sure to link these up on the show notes
great.
Too.
And for the guys, you know, I'll say this. I don't have any immediate programs for guys, but there are huge numbers of guys that watch my YouTube videos and really appear to get an enormous amount from them and are part of that community. And I think that's great. I'm a guy and I talk to women, but everything I say is useful to me as well.
Sure.
So I would encourage guys to go and subscribe to my YouTube channel and actually watch those videos because
they're really
good. Yeah.
They're really good.
They're fun and they're, you know, designed to be useful. So, they're useful on a human level, not just a one gender. So my YouTube channel is called Get the Guy Team, but if you just type in Matthew Hussey into YouTube.
Yeah.
You're going to see it.
Awesome. We'll have it all linked up on your website, gettheguy.co.uk as well. We'll have it linked up. Very excited, man. We're going to have you back on here soon, hopefully. Last question is, what's your definition of greatness?
Oh, my God. I love your questions, man. I love them. They're just they're challenging. My definition of greatness. I guess to your point on humility, it's someone who continues to strive to be better and to know more. Hmm. And whilst they're doing it, instead of looking at those who they are better than in that area, they're always looking up at the people who seem to know more than them.
Yeah.
So, you know, they look up, not down. When they're figuring out where they stand in the hierarchy.
There you go. Matt, thanks for coming on, bro.
Thank you.
Appreciate you, man.
I appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
And there you have it, greats. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Matt. If you did enjoy this, make sure to head back to lewishouse.com/189. You're going to get all the links for Matt's information, his website, his YouTube channel, which I recommend checking out. Follow him online. Let him know that you listened to this episode. Let him know what you thought about this episode. And make sure to connect with him. He's a great guy, and he's got great content. I highly recommend it. If you enjoyed this, please share this with your friends. If you know a man or a woman who would be interested in this episode or might find it helpful in their relationships, then send lewishouse.com/189. Send that link off to your friends. Either email them or post it on social media and let them know what you think. I think it's going to be really helpful for a lot of people. So, and again, thank you guys so much for being on here. It means the world to me that you continue to listen and to spread the word of greatness to your friends, to your family, to your coworkers, to your employees. And we're in this together, guys. So as I learn, I want to share with you what I'm learning from some of the greatest minds in the world. And I hope you continue to share, learn it, and then apply it in your life and then share the wisdom as well. We're all in this together. Thank you guys so much for all that you do. You know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great. We'll be right back.
You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I've learned the hard way that constantly holding on to your emotions and repeatedly choosing to not talk about your feelings will only make you feel worse and worse. And up until about 10 or 11 years ago, I was afraid to talk about my trauma that I experienced. And I know we all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. But therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Lewis today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/L-E-W-I-S.